Chapter 5. Paradise. With almost simultaneous gamma-ray bursts, the Kristang frigate, to seek glory and battle, is glorious, and the destroyer we are proud to honor Clan Subleader Rosh Atal Vergent, who inspires us every day, emerged above Lemuria about 23,000 kilometers apart. They emerged on either side of the unlucky Ruhar frigate Tolin Grathur. Because of pressure put on the Task Force Commodore by the Chief Administrator, the defending Task Force had stationed a single frigate above Lemuria to prevent, or at least lessen, the severity of future raids. Unfortunately for the Grathur, the Kristang had been watching that ship's patrols and noticed a pattern. There was a place the Ruhar frigate returned to reliably every 11 hours. Seeing an opportunity to hit the enemy hard with manageable risk, the Kristang Task Force commander had approved the idea of a raid by the captain of the destroyer Vergent, and naturally the experienced frigate Glory had been assigned to the mission. That fact understandably did not please the crew of the Little Glory. Both Kristang ships emerged with weapons hot and fired missiles, maser cannons, and the destroyer launched railgun darts at the Grathur. Only luck saved the Grathur from complete destruction that day. A maser beam from the Glory hit a missile from the Vergent just as that missile evaded the Grathur's point defenses. Instead of a devastating direct hit, the explosion of the missile warhead 1,200 kilometers away only severely damaged the Grathur, allowing that hapless ship to perform a short emergency jump. The Grathur would be out of service for several weeks repairing damage, which the Kristang commander counted as good as a kill. The captain of the Vergent was bitterly disappointed that he could not claim a complete victory that day, and he had blamed the crew of the Glory, although it had been an accident. The Vergent's missile had been maneuvering violently to avoid fire from the Grathur's point defense cannons and flew right into a maser beam from the Glory. In the chaos of battle, it happened, and it was no one's fault. The crew of the Vergent still blamed the Glory. The crew of the Glory were happy merely to have survived another day. Earth. The next call I needed to make was to one of the prior merry band of pirates. "Hey, Skippy, I have a special request. It's kind of unusual. I need to call someone, and I need the call to be completely private on both ends."
"Sure thing. Is this person living or dead?"
"What? Living, of course. Wait." Skippy could do so many incredible things, and he was still constantly surprising me with things he could do. "Oh, my God. Can you really talk to dead people?"
"No, you big stupid head," he laughed.
"Of course not. Damn, you are dense sometimes."
"Then why the hell did you ask?"
"You said this request is unusual, so I was trying to judge just how idiotic this was going to be. You know, will this be normal Joe-level moronic, or are you cooking up something truly special to entertain me?"
"You are such an asshole. Can you do it or not?"
"Whew!" He let out an exasperated breath.
"Please, easy peasy, Joe. Who do you want to call?"
"Dr. Friedlander."
"Our friendly local rocket scientist? Is he in any condition to talk? I think he sprained his brain aboard the Dutchman trying to understand how the reactors work," Skippy chuckled.
"Skippy, be nice once in a while."
"Okay, okay. For a monkey, he's not nearly as dim as the rest of you. And he does tell good jokes sometimes."
"Friedlander? Tells jokes?" This completely surprised me, although I hadn't spent much time with the science team.
"Yes. Aboard the ship, he started every science team meeting with a joke. Like, 'Did you hear the one about the rooster?'"
Skippy was going to tell the joke anyway, so I played along.
"No.
This farmer has a rooster that is growing old, and the farmer decides it's time to get a new rooster. So he goes down the road to his neighbor, Gilroy, and he buys a young rooster. When he gets home..." Skippy was already laughing at his own joke. "He puts the young rooster in the pen. The young rooster struts up to the old rooster and says, 'Hey, old-timer, you need to hit the road. This is my place now.' The old rooster says, 'You're right, it is my time, but I'll tell you what. Someday you'll be old, and a young rooster will come along to kick you out. I don't want the ladies to see me just walk away. Could you chase me around some? We'll fight for a minute for me to keep my dignity, and then I'll leave.' And the young rooster feels sorry for the old one and says, 'Sure, old-timer, let's go.' So the young rooster chases the old rooster around the hen house, and the farmer comes out to see what the commotion is. He says, 'What the hell?' He grabs his shotgun and blows the young rooster away. As the old rooster is chuckling, the farmer says, 'Damn, Gilroy done sold me a gay rooster!'"
I laughed, and Skippy laughed. You're right, that is a good one. Maybe I needed to make more of an effort to get to know all the people aboard the ship. Can you call Friedlander? Wait a minute. He's in his kitchen with his wife right now. I can make the call completely private, but I can't prevent his wife from overhearing him talk. He is about to go outside to get something out of the tool shed. You can talk to him then. I was curious. How do you know he's in the kitchen? Duh. You really have to ask? Seriously? Well, since you asked, in this particular case, they have one of those fancy refrigerators with internet connectivity and touch screen. That is not the best idea if you're concerned about privacy, by the way. Also, one of their yogurts is expired. It's behind the bread. That's why they haven't noticed it. I made a mental note to get a really, really old non-digital fridge if I ever got a place of my own. Okay, Friedlander just walked outside. I'll call his phone now? Yes, thank you. There was a delay of a couple seconds, and I was about to ask Skippy what was the problem. Then I heard Friedlander's voice. Hello? Who is this? He demanded. Doctor, it's Joe Bishop. Oh, sorry for snapping at you. There was no caller ID, and I don't usually answer those calls, but my phone somehow picked up the call by itself. That's because this call is going through Skippy, not a cellular network. Yes, Skippy's voice broke in. Skippytel has amazing rate plans and the best quality of service. Exclusions apply, not available in other solar systems or to people I don't like. Got it, Skippy, thank you, I said. I'll consider switching my plan to Skippytel. Please send me your brochure. Dr. Friedlander, we're going through Skippy because I want this call to be completely private. Can you talk? Give me a moment. I'm in my tool shed, and my wife is in the house. UNEF has decided to send the Dutchman back out. I would have thought that was obvious, he said. I could hear the sarcasm in his voice. And so did I, but it took a while for the bureaucratic wheels to get into motion, I guess. The reason I called is to see if you were interested in going back out with us. Oh, wait a minute. He was silent a moment. I had to check that my wife is still in the house. I am not sure about going again, Colonel Bishop, he answered slowly. Last week, NASA invited me to train for the mission to recover that Kristang troopship. We still have to do that? Skippy won't bring that troopship back for us? I asked him to bring it back for my birthday. Now my voice had the sarcasm. Joe, Skippy broke in again. I already got you a pair of socks. And I appreciate that, Skippy. Truthfully, I would rather have a starship. These are a very nice pair of socks, Joe, he said with a sniff. However, I will consider it. Unless Skippy changes his mind soon, I concluded. We should assume NASA has to go out there in old-fashioned chemical rockets. You would rather go on that mission than join us aboard the Dutchman again? What I want is not the only consideration. Oh. Crap, this was going to get complicated. My wife told me she married an engineer, not an astronaut. She was a nervous wreck when we got home. Doctor, this time we do expect the Dutchman to return. Last time we didn't. But you went anyway. I didn't quite believe your speech about how we wouldn't be coming back. I wasn't kidding about that, I said, frustrated. Which I realized when we got out there, and I learned that we can't operate the ship without Skippy. By then it was too late. Before we left, I told my wife there was no way UNEF would allow a valuable asset like a Theranan starship to be put at risk. I figured all the talk about the high level of risk was something UNEF lawyers made you say, so that if anything did go wrong, the families couldn't sue UNEF. Sorry about that. Colonel, I wasn't the only person who thought that way. The whole science team did. All my serious speeches had been for nothing? I suppose it doesn't matter now. Your wife is okay with you going into space with NASA? No. No, I told NASA that I need to think about it. My wife is very much against me going up in a NASA rocket, or a Chinese rocket. Any craft we send out to that troop ship will be experimental. I'm not enthusiastic about the idea either. NASA wants me to go because they're hoping that I learned enough about the flower to be able to get the troop ship's reactor restarted. That surprised me. You can do that? No. And I told that to NASA. I think they're hoping that I'm wrong. Colonel, I appreciate the offer. I gathered so much data aboard the flower and the Dutchman already, it will take me years to... I need you to lead the new science team, I said before he could finish. Me? Colonel, I'm an engineer. I don't do basic research and theory. I figure out how to make theories do something useful. Out among the stars, we should be...
Doctor, on this mission, UNEF wants engineers, not biologists or cosmologists.
I stumbled over that word. Wasn't that people who gave fancy haircuts?
No, I remembered with relief. Those were cosmetologists, like my cousin Debbie. Or chemists, or any kind of ist.
UNEF wants people who can figure out how the Dutchman and any other alien technology we encounter works.
Friedlander sounded puzzled. Why didn't they do that the first time?
Because, as I said many times, last time they didn't really expect the ship to ever come back.
And this time they do, so they care about us delivering concrete results.
You got it, Doctor. There was a pause in the conversation. Maybe I should have done this face-to-face rather than over a phone. I pictured him in a tool shed surrounded by a lawnmower, weed whacker, rakes, shovels, and a bucket of topsoil. If I closed my eyes, I knew what it smelled like. A bit musty with dried dirt and grass and gasoline and plywood. It smelled like suburbia. It smelled like freedom. It smelled like America.
Finally, he spoke.
Why me, Colonel?
You have experience aboard the Dutchman, and that counts a lot, because it means you have proven to be cool under pressure. Also, you got along well with people in a confined environment. That counted for a lot. There had been flare-ups of personality conflicts even among our carefully chosen merry band of pirates.
Mostly I'm hoping you are someone I can count on. We are sticking to a limit of 70 people again, and this time we will have some, let's say, observers and intel people from UNEF. So the science team will have fewer people. I'd like you to select a wide mix of expertise for your team. Doctor, you know that we have no idea what fields of knowledge we will need once we're out there. On Newark, biology and archaeology were critical for unraveling the mystery of that planet. And the science team ran an analysis that made Skippy realize an entire moon had been vaporized. UNEF is going to want to stuff the science team with you rocket scientist types so they can hopefully figure out how Theranan technology works. You understand how useful it might be for that team to not be narrowly focused. It may mean the difference between us coming home or not.
I agree with you on that point, Colonel.
Do you need an answer right now?
No, I replied. Give it 3 days. No more than that, though. If you're on board, you'll need to head start selecting your team.
Oh, he groaned. This is not going to be easy to sell to my wife.
And there, I knew he wanted to come with us.
I understand. Doctor, I'm not going to give you a duty, honor, a humanity speech. I'd very much appreciate if you can come with us, but you've done your duty already. Think about it, and call me either way, please.
Friedlander called me the next morning, waking me from sleep because I was on Paris time.
Colonel Bishop, you still want me on the next mission?
Absolutely. We need you to lead the science team, and Skippy wants you aboard because he says you tell good jokes.
I didn't know that.
Friedlander chuckled.
Why did the two blondes freeze to death at the drive-in theater?
I don't know.
They went to see Closed for the Winter.
Ah, I laughed. That is a good one.
Skippy is right.
Someone needed to lighten up our boring science team meetings.
Colonel, I discussed the situation with my wife last night, and I will join the mission on two conditions.
Okay, what are those?
Please, please, I said to myself, make it something reasonable.
First, this time we are coming back, correct? That is the plan?
I'm the wrong person to answer that question, but yes.
Skippy has promised me we will bring the ship back to Earth before the next mission, whatever that is.
He wants to hold off contacting the Collective until he has answers about what happened to Newark and some other things.
Friedlander gave an audible sigh of relief.
That is good to hear. My wife will be very pleased to hear that. And I've told her that being aboard the Dutchman is safer than going up in that spacecraft NASA is building.
Don't tell NASA I said that.
I won't.
And your second condition?
Promise me that I won't be killed on some planet by a giant space lizard.
That made me laugh.
Doctor, don't worry. If you are ever about to be eaten by a giant space lizard, I will shoot you first.
That's close enough, I guess.
Colonel, would you like to see the list of people I want on the science team?
It will be your science team, Doctor. The team is your choice. The 7 best qualified people you can find.
Whew, he exhaled.
That's a lot of pressure on me, then.
7 qualified people who are willing to leave on short notice for an interstellar mission of unknown danger. Can I promise they won't be eaten by a giant space lizard?
Let's not go crazy, Doctor. We may need to throw one of them to the giant space lizard to save ourselves.
In Paris, I met the new mission commander, Hans Chotek. We had a cordial and professional meeting that I almost ruined by calling him Chocula. Luckily, I caught myself in time and said Chotek instead. Skippy had shown me the mission commander's resume, and it was impressive, particularly for a guy in his early 40s. He had been all over the world and handled all kinds of crises for the UN. Not all of them successfully, of course, because it is, you know, the UN. We got off on the wrong foot by him spending the first 20 minutes trying to impress me. Then he must have realized I was bored. My jaw-stretching yawn may have been a clue. So we talked about the mission objectives UNEF Command had given us. Given to him. "Sir," I began, "I do have a problem with our mission objectives. One of them." He looked mildly surprised. Whether he was surprised that I disagreed with the mission objectives established by UNEF Command, or surprised that a comparatively low-ranking sergeant colonel would express doubts openly, I couldn't guess.
"Our primary objective," I shook my head.
"Our primary objective is correct, and I have no problem with it. We were tasked primarily with determining what the Thurana knew about the destruction of their surveyor task force, and whether they would be sending another ship to Earth. The primary objective also stated that if we found a way to establish an ongoing intelligence source to proactively warn us about threats to Earth, we should take the opportunity to do so." Fine. All that made sense to me. The only quibble I had about our primary objective was that UNEF Command had been frustratingly vague about what we were supposed to do if we learned another surveyor ship was on its way to Earth. If the Thuranan planned to send a surveyor ship, but that ship was not scheduled to begin its mission until well in the future, we were to take the Dutchman all the way back to Earth for consultation? If there was not enough time to consult with Earth, we were to use our best judgment, meaning Chotek's judgment, since UNEF Command had been clear that they did not trust mine. Were we supposed to prevent a second surveyor from reaching Earth, even if the risk of exposing the fact that humans were flying around in our own pirate starship? If so, what level of exposure risk was acceptable? UNEF Command had provided no guidance on that critical issue. Those damned cowards who had reamed me a new asshole over the carefully measured and entirely successful risk I took in landing on Newark were afraid to make any judgment of their own. Anyway, the first objective we were given was fine. We could manage any ambiguities when we had to. The decision would not be up to me. It would be Chotek who would make the final call. Except that I, Skippy, the merry band of pirates, and even Count Chocula himself fully expected me to mutiny and override Chotek's decision if I thought it endangered humanity. Great. Whatever. Such is the life of a pirate captain. What I would appreciate is some nice pirate booty to go with the responsibility, but that wasn't going to happen. "The problem is our secondary objective," I explained. "To gather information about the expeditionary force on Paradise?" Now he was clearly surprised.
"I do not understand, Mr. Bishop. Surely you of all people would want to know the fate of your fellow soldiers in UNEF."
"I would like to know, if the answer is they are all living happily ever after on Paradise," I said with what I hoped came across as sarcasm. "The problem is that I think it extremely unlikely that fairy tale is the truth. It is much more likely that we are going to discover information that is not so favorable, that UNEF on Paradise is struggling or in danger or being persecuted. And then what? What good does it do for us to have that unpleasant information?"
"When we have information, we have choices, Mr. Bishop."
"Without information, choices to do what exactly, Mr. Chotek?" "I see one choice if we discover the expeditionary force on Paradise is endangered. We feel bad about it, and we do absolutely nothing. That is the same effective result as if we discover they are all living happy lives of luxury. In either case, we do absolutely nothing. We can't do anything useful. We can't do anything at all. We can't even send them a message, because that would undoubtedly be intercepted by the Ruhar or Krestang or both. Then the whole galaxy would know that humans escaped from Paradise and are flying around in a pirate ship. Surely we can..." "Looking for trouble on Paradise goes against two principles I have learned in my career, Mr. Chotek. First, never ask a question for which you don't want to hear the answer. Second, never give an order you know won't be obeyed."
"What does that mean, Colonel?"
he asked evenly, but I could see his Adam's apple bob ever so slightly with anxiety. Mr. Chotek, we have a crew of highly dedicated, highly trained, highly motivated special forces who have what we in the military call a bias for action. When they see a problem, they want to act. They expect to act. What do you think will happen when they learn our people on Paradise are threatened or are actively being killed? I expect they are also highly disciplined, Colonel Bishop. What would you do? That would certainly depend on the situation. And, great, then let me present you with an example. I took a breath and plunged ahead. Let's say we are in the Paradise system, under stealth, or however we get close enough to obtain intel. We learn, we see, that our people are in prison camps being starved because they have run out of food, and the Ruhar have a very limited ability to feed them. Half of the expeditionary force has already died of starvation. The Ruhar military force on and around Paradise is weak, weak enough that this ship could take them on easily. We could take the planet back. We could feed some of our people. We could even bring some of them home. What will you order us to do? You are the mission commander. This is your decision. He took a moment to answer. I see your point, Colonel. Any action we take would expose us and endanger Earth. As difficult as it would be, my decision would have to be that the ship must remain in stealth and return to Earth without intervening or revealing our presence. You expect that order to be obeyed? Do you really expect the crew of this pirate ship to stand down and do nothing while our people, their comrades, are dying? This time he did not answer immediately. Would you obey such an order, Colonel? I don't know, I answered honestly. And if I pass that order on to my subordinates, I am not confident my orders would be obeyed. I see, Chotek said thoughtfully. We are all alone out there, Mr. Chotek. During our last mission, I was outside the ship in a spacesuit with a spec ops team for zero gravity training. One of the special forces asked Skippy whether we could see the sun from there, and Skippy enhanced the image in our helmet visors so we could see the faint light of our home star. I remember Skippy reminding us that the light we were seeing then left the sun 1,800 years ago. The Roman Empire ruled the Mediterranean back then. Under that perspective, the authority of Earth begins to seem thin after we pass through a couple wormholes. Colonel, he said, you have given me much to think about. Please understand that I have limited flexibility about our mission objectives. UNEF Command made it very clear that they want to know the situation on Paradise. Unless there is a compelling reason for us not to pursue gathering information about Paradise, I do not see that I have authority to override that objective, regardless of my personal feelings on the subject. A compelling reason, I mused. How about this? If you judge that pursuing intelligence about Paradise posed a risk of this ship exposing our presence out here, would that be a compelling reason to override our stated objective, even if such exposure were, let's say, inadvertent? He pinched his chin. This was deeply troubling him. His entire purpose for being aboard the Flying Dutchman was because UNEF did not trust my judgment about keeping our pirate ship secret. Now he saw that assuring we took zero risk of exposure was a complicated calculation. Virtually anything we did on the other side of Earth's local wormhole risked exposure. I will need to think about this, he said. We have to achieve our primary objective first. Then we will need to reevaluate our next steps. And Colonel, I do appreciate that our primary objective involves considerable risk of us becoming exposed. None of these decisions will be simple or easy. I was glad to hear that, even if it was a little late. Flying all the way to Paris, except for the meeting of our new mission commander, was a waste of my time. After 3 days of me trying to run the ship from the ground, Skippy sent down a dropship and I went aboard the Flying Dutchman. The ship was a beehive of frantic activity, even more than last time. The difference this time was UNEF Command expected us to come back, so they cared that we had everything we might need loaded aboard. When Major Sims first saw me, she snapped a quick salute, threw up her hands, and shooed me out of the cargo bay so she could get a mountain of gear stowed away. Sir, a haggard-looking Major Sims said as she knocked on my office doorframe a couple minutes later. We have two more shipments coming up from Earth, then we'll be fully loaded. I was able to get all the special items you asked for except for this fluff thing. She looked at me with a raised eyebrow. I was able to get a different kind of marshmallow cream. She held up a white plastic jar from a warehouse store. It was labeled marshmallow cream. I sucked in a breath. Generic fluff? I sputtered in shock. Until that moment, I hadn't known there was anything but true fluff. The white jar in her hand emanated pure evil. I could barely look at it. Major, that is an unholy abomination. You can't make a fluff-a-nutter sandwich with that. She looked at the label skeptically. Sir, it has the same ingredient, Major. Do not mess with someone's childhood, I said with all seriousness. A scoop of fluff on top of a mug of hot chocolate on a cold day? Yum. Whatever that heinous imposter is in your hand there, we can't have it aboard this ship. How much did you get? 4 of these jars, she said with great weariness. I'll send it back down when the dropship is unloaded. I don't want to risk contaminating the planet with that abomination. Could we toss it out an airlock and let it burn up in the atmosphere? That suggestion was made only half-jokingly. This was all my fault. The list I gave to Sims of items I wanted aboard the Dutchman only had 3 items on it, but fluff was one of them. What I should have done was buy a couple of jars while I was home, but I couldn't see myself lugging them around in my suitcase. UNEF Command already thought I was too immature for command. Maybe I could ask my parents to send a care package to Wright-Patterson, or wherever Sims was loading the dropships. I will take care of that, sir. She turned and left with a wry smile. I never did find out if she'd really tossed them out an airlock. I also never did get a jar of real fluff. I wandered down to a cargo bay that had been set aside for Special Forces gear. Major Smythe was there with his Spec Ops team leaders, personally checking every single piece of equipment and making a list of the gear they still needed. "Welcome aboard again, Colonel Bishop," Smythe said while snapping a salute. I returned the salute. And that was the end of the saluting that would be required aboard the ship, except for formal ceremonies. Major Smythe, I pointed to his new rank insignia. Maybe I'm not saying this the right way, but I'm sorry that your special forces did not see much action on the last mission. Colonel, that is not a problem for us. We are here to provide an elite capability whenever that capability is needed. Special forces are used to a lot of hurry-up-and-wait and clandestine missions when we are only needed if something goes very wrong. Most of the time, if the enemy knows that special forces have been in the area, we have failed our mission. On these missions, the enemy can't even know that we exist. We understand that the need to avoid exposure severely limits our ability to engage in combat operations. It severely limits our ability to do pretty much anything out here, I agreed. We will be... He ejected a clip from a Kristang rifle, then set the rifle carefully on a rack. Seeing substantially more action on this mission? I nodded. According to Skippy, there is no alternative. Do you feel up to combat against the Theranin? Against genetically enhanced cyborgs with superior technology? My people will be ready, sir. Hopefully Skippy can give us some sort of an advantage. He doesn't think so, I said glumly. But I'll talk with him. I was in my cabin to change out of my formal uniform when Adams called me from the CIC. Colonel, we just received a message from UNEF Command. Go ahead, I answered, spitting out a mouthful of toothpaste. Why did people always call when I was in the bathroom? Talking while kneeling on the floor of a cramped Theranin bathroom seemed undignified, so I carefully stood up, wary of the low ceiling. NASA has telescopes watching that Kristang troopship, and they've picked up an increased infrared signature. Something out there is heating up, sir. Uh-huh. Thank you, Sergeant. I'm going to ask a certain shiny beer can what he knows about that. I ended the call on my Z-phone and looked at the speaker in the ceiling, knowing Skippy was always listening. Hey, Skippy, do you know anything about activity on that troop ship? You monkeys noticed that, huh? Apparently, yes. You're not trying to blow it up, are you? Please, please say no. Not blowing it up, Joe. I'm restarting the reactor temporarily to get a partial charge for the ship's jump drive coils. You are planning to jump it somewhere? I asked hopefully. Yes, he said with a sigh. I've been looking at the plans for the spacecraft you monkeys are building. It's like a can made from newspaper and cow manure, only less flightworthy. I can't stand the idea of brave but idiotic astronauts making a long journey in that flimsy piece of crap. But I still don't want you monkeys whacking each other with sticks over that ship, so I'm jumping it halfway to your moon. Your nations will still need to cooperate to get above low Earth orbit.
That is a nice surprise. Thank you, Skippy.
Ah, don't mention it. The socks I bought you for your birthday are on back order, so I had to get you something else. A starship beats socks any day.
But these were very nice socks, Joe, and I got you a card and everything.
I laughed. That is very much appreciated. How about this? For my next birthday, I'll set up a gift registry, and you can select something from the list.
Ooh, that's a good idea. I saw this in a movie.
Considering that Skippy had probably seen every movie ever made, that was not surprising. I tried to think of how many romantic comedies had a gift registry as part of the plot.
It was The Wizard of Oz. For your gift, you want a brain, right?
Crap. I walked right into that one, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. If it had been a tree, you would have broken your nose.
Thanks for keeping me alert, I guess.
When do you plan to jump that ship?
We jump out of here in 3 days, so I'll do it in 2 days. In case UNEF gets too excited as soon as the jump drive coils are charged sufficiently, I am shutting the reactor down again.
They'll need to figure that out by themselves.
And tell your NASA that Dr. Friedlander is not available to get that troop ship's reactor restarted. He started telling me a joke this morning, and he got interrupted.
That rocket scientist weasel isn't going anywhere until he tells me the freaking punchline, Skippy grumbled.
I will inform UNEF then. They will be very pleased.
I do have one question first. Are you sure that bringing that ship back won't be seen as you caving in to UNEF?
Huh?
No, why would they think that? There was no quid pro quo here.
Ugh, you don't understand Latin. I'll use language you can understand. I did not make a bargain with UNEF. I got everything I wanted and gave no concessions to them. Me bringing that ship back is a gift from the benevolent, all-powerful Skippy, plain and simple.
All right, then. Personally, I was afraid that UNEF would see this as me having influence on Skippy and being able to get him to do other things in the future. UNEF had better not get used to that.
One more thing, then.
Really?
I bring you a starship and you want more? Unbelievable. This is simple, I promise.
Fine, he huffed.
What is it?
That troop ship has a Kristang name, right? Some long-ass poetry thing?
Correct. The Kristang traditionally named their troop carriers after soldiers who died particularly gloriously in battle. This one is called the Everlong Remembrance of Coast of Lakranda, who served with ultimate honor.
Wow. This Coast guy, what did he do?
Well, his family is well-connected in their clan, so naming the ship after him was partly political. He was a first son, and he died when his dropship got shot down. This was after he led a raid on another Kristang clan, a raid that resulted in the deaths of almost 3,000, including females and children. Also, there is suspicion he was drunk the day of that raid. My mouth opened to remark that Coast was no hero, when I remembered the Ruha whales that I had shot down. Almost 1,000 Ruha had died then. For that action, the Kristang had insisted that I be promoted to wear the colonel's silver eagles that now adorned my uniform. I am certain the Ruha did not think I am any kind of hero.
Skippy, I want you to rename that ship as the Yu-Kishan.
Oh. Joe, it is not often that I say this, but in this case I completely agree with your suggestion. Sergeant Yu-Kishan of the Chinese Army had sacrificed himself to prevent a Kristang crewman from self-destructing the flower when we boarded that frigate near Paradise. Everything we had accomplished since then we owed to Yu-Kishan.
Done. The official designation of the ship is now the Everlong Remembrance of Yu-Kishan, who served with ultimate honor.
My intention had been to rename it as simply Yu-Kishan, but what Skippy did was better. Everyone was going to call it the Yu anyway.
Thank you, Skippy.
UNEF Command was indeed thrilled when I told them the U would soon be back in Earth orbit. They also congratulated me for persuading Skippy to cooperate, even though I told them several times that I had nothing to do with it. And I'm sure that somewhere Chuckles the Clown was patting himself on the back for getting Skippy to do what UNEF wanted. Maybe in some way he was right about that. Maybe he hadn't manipulated Skippy into doing what UNEF wanted. Maybe Chuckles had manipulated me into getting Skippy to do UNEF's bidding. I didn't like that idea at all. What I did enjoy was telling Lieutenant Colonel Chang about renaming the troop ship. We had talked about honoring Sergeant Yu in some way, but hadn't done anything about it until now. Truthfully, we had been kinda, you know, busy. Chang was visibly affected by my gesture of renaming the ship. I thought I saw a tear in his eye. He later told me that he had called Yu's family personally to inform them of how UNEF was honoring their son. He did that before I told UNEF of the renaming, so that some idiot desk-bound bureaucrat at UNEF Command wouldn't be able to order me not to do it. One thing that being in the military had taught me is that it is better to act and ask forgiveness than to hesitate and ask permission.